In today's quest, we meet the man who inherited the curse of Amalasuntha's death. The Gothic War has begun. This is the Quest for Power. Welcome back to the Quest for Power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. We are Scott and Michael, and we are your fellow history nerds in arms as we go back and we tackle the power struggle for Italy and the Ostrogothic crown. And like always, like us on Facebook and Instagram at Quest for Power Pod, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. So, now with all of that introduction, business, liking us, hullabaloo out of the way, Michael, you've been, we haven't spoken
in a bit. I know. It's like once you have another human being in your household, like all your time just goes away. We went from speaking to each other, what, every other day to when we do this in D&D now?
God forbid we have lives.
I know. Awful. So, yeah, I've been taking care of a lot of diapers. That's been a lot of what I've been doing.
Yeah. I bet. Yeah, and okay. have you been able to sleep?
Yeah, actually surprisingly, yeah. Well, since I have to work and my wife does not, she lets me sleep throughout the night, which is very, very nice of her because she does not have to do that. Not every couple is that way. But then again, I will take the role more during the day and stuff like that when I'm off of work, you know, to give her a load. So it all will even out eventually. We'll figure it all out.
That's right.
Yeah. So what have you been up to? Concerts? Like, man, you're living the single dream.
I definitely am. I went to like two concerts, which is actually, it's funny because they're like clashing aesthetics, I guess, or genres. So I went and saw John Mellencamp. When you told me that,
I can't believe that he's still touring.
Yeah, he's 71, as it turns out. And you wouldn't like know it looking at him. He looks like, I was like, oh my God, he's 71. Like he looks and like sounds and like moves like really well for 71. So really great show. I did not know like half the songs because like, I don't know. It's not like I'm an avid Mellencamp person, but I knew at least like a few of the songs. So, but genuinely just like a really fun show anyways. So
that's always
really
good.
Cool. And then I saw Insomnium, so more of a metal concert like later in the week. So
definitely a metal name. What I've never heard of them in the metal atmosphere.
They are like I'd feel like that they, and this like might be like simplifying or like maybe talking them up a little much, but I feel like their guitar work, like they have a lot more intricate work with like they focus on like guitar centric stuff, but like honestly the guy's voice is like really great. Like he's got like the vocalist has got like these really great like you know like these like the growls and stuff like that.
Oh yep
does it really well. So it's a really awesome, fantastic show. This is the third time I've seen them.
That's really cool.
Is the second time I've seen them headlining. I've seen them as opening for another act before. So they're really, really good.
Wow, that's
big
awesome.
Fan. Did magic tournaments this week too. So I've had a nonstop. So
yeah, we didn't even have D&D last week like we were supposed to because you were at the concert. Was that reason?
Yeah, concert. Yep.
Yeah.
So busy life, but now we are. You know, going to turn our time turners back, to like
a
long time ago where things didn't move quite so fast.
We're gonna go all the way back to what some people call the Dark Ages, some people call the early Middle Ages. We're just gonna say we're gonna go back to the Ostrogothic Kingdom. Before we start, we're going to, of course, we have to go through our sources. We have the histories of Procopius from the Roman point of view again. He writes all about Belisarius's and Justinian Glorious's feats. I don't know if we've gotten Procopius yet, but he is now writing about the Gothic Wars. And so it's really kind of interesting because he's sometimes there at the war and sometimes not. And I don't always remember when he is there and when he is not. But there's a whole, when we go into Justinian's reign, there's a whole set of politics that just go on in, over in Constantinople that just have ripple effects over here in Italy. But what's really funny is he writes all pro-Roman for a while, and then for and then at the end of his life, he writes an entire book bashing Belisarius and Justinian and his wife Theodora. So the truth is in somewhere. And then, since we're doing the Goths, we have our Jordanes or Jordanias, as some other people have called them. Jordanias sounds more fancy, so I guess we can go with that.
All right.
But without further ado, previously on the quest for power, after the great Theodoric the Great passed away, the title of the King of the Ostrogoths in Italy passed to his grandson Athalaric. Athalaric, being a minor, made his mother Amalasuntha queen regent. While regent, she maintained good relations with the powerful Eastern Roman Empire, powerful Eastern Roman Emperor Justinian, and really was stable during her reign. Unfortunately, when Athalaric was still not able to rule because of his age, he decided to pass away, and his mother became the first queen of the Ostrogoths and of our podcast. The first one that we dove into, besides who was the other one? It was
Eudoxia.
Galla Placidia.
Yeah.
When she was with, I guess we've had a couple of queens, yeah.
Yeah, but none that we like, I don't think really had much of like dedicated.
Yeah, there wasn't too much on the sources. I think Galla Placidia, there's quite a bit. We could have gone a whole thing on hers, but that was towards like a Roman storyline that didn't really mess when we were doing with the Visigoths, so I just moved past that. Maybe that could be a Patreon episode down the road. But unfortunately, back to the story, since Malasuntha was a woman, she needed to promote a relative named Theodahad to be a co-ruler with her. And soon after that, she was imprisoned for her niceness of, you know, promoting him to co-ruler, and then later strangled to death in her bath. And that is where our kingdom is at when we take over. So, in her place is Theodahad the Forgotten of House Amali, King of Italy and the Ostrogoths. It's another Theo name for you, Scott.
Just, you know, just add it to the pile, because we got, what, like six?
Theodoric the First, Theodoric the Second, Theodoric the Great. In Theodoric the Great's episode, we had Theodoric the Squinter. In Alaric's episode, we had Theodosius the First. I think we had Theodosius the Second. So that's six that I can come up with off the top of my head.
Hey.
Theodahad was born in Tarisium, which is today North Macedonia. It's north of Greece, that area. His mother was Amalafrida, and her first husband, whose name, ironically, we don't know. It's kind of funny. This time, we know the mother's name, but not the father's name, which is kind of funny. The reason we know the mother's name is if you remember, she became queen of the Vandals and wife of Vandal King Thrasamund, and she happened to be the sister of, you know, the Theodoric the Great, so she's going to be talked about a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Theodahad doesn't really appear on the record until the child Ostrogothic King Athalaric dies in his youth. His mother, Amalasuntha, became queen, but because of the way their society works, she had to promote Theodahad to co-ruler, in an effort to legitimize her rule in the eyes of the very chauvinistic nobility that is of the Ostrogoths. Under what some assumed to be the direct orders of Theodahad, the nobility revolted, imprisoned the queen in 535 on an island in Lake Bolsena, located in Italy. Regardless if he did it or not, it was not really great for him. She was later assassinated in captivity, and that took over all influence he had over her power base. Unfortunately for Theodahad, she was later assassinated in captivity, which took away all influence he had over her power base. The ambitious Eastern Emperor Justinian used the murder of Malasuntha as a pretext to starting a war with the Ostrogoths. So in early 536, he made good on his threat, and Theodahad received some unfortunate news that the accomplished general Belisarius had landed in southern Italy and was now on his way to Naples. I don't know if you remember, Belisarius is the one who took out the Vandal kingdom completely. So,
yeah, he did a lot, didn't he? Or am I also thinking, it's kind of hard to also like think of, was he also the one who did the dream team with the Visigoths, or is that a different?
No, that was General Aetius. That was a different one. That was a way different time, if I recall. I think the West.
Yes, yeah, that's that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all like us jumping around between the different things and places and times messes with my perception.
Yeah, the Western Empire existed then. The Western Empire didn't exist when he went against the Vandals. So
that's right, yeah. It's been a long, if we haven't, yeah, we haven't done these in a while, so
yeah, it takes a little bit to kind of get the hang of again. Well, to remember, yeah, to remember.
Yeah,
I'll probably. It's not like we're taking a test. Although there, you never know, there might be one at the end. So this is the beginning of a very long and brutal war called the Gothic War, and this is going to last until the Ostrogothic Kingdom is no more. So we are going to be in this brutal war for a while. And according to Procopius, many locals flocked to the Romans' banner. He states, and then let's do the DM voice.
Every day the people of that region kept coming over to him. For since their towns from of old been without walls, they had no means at all of guarding them. And because of their hostility toward the Goths, they were, what as was natural, greatly dissatisfied with their present government. And Abrimus came over to Belisarius as a deserter from the Goths, together with all of his followers.
So basically they're like saying that, you know, the Goths, they just let all the towns go, and they didn't even give like their garrison to guard them and all that. But, you know, with the Procopius is essentially bashing Goths at this point. Keep in mind, he is alongside the campaign. He has accurate information, but his spin has got to be ridiculously pro-Roman at this point.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a pretty harsh attack when you're saying you're not protecting your stuff, which is like the bare minimum function of government.
I think it's the core tenet of government. If you don't protect anything, you're, you know.
Yeah. Then what are you, right?
What are we doing here?
Yeah. Know? Like, it's really hard to secure the rest of your stuff without any military.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, whatever ideals or ways you think you ought to run things.
Yeah. Like, even as big, as expansive as our governments now, the core purpose of them is to keep us safe. If it's not, there's no point of government. You know, that's literally their job.
Exactly.
So despite most of the towns leading to Naples were undefended, Naples was garrisoned and it had supplies to outlast the siege long enough for help to arrive. And
from whom?
Hopefully they're, you know, Ostrogothic counterparts that the king should be sending. While they were waiting for them to arrive, the local Jewish population, bolstered the Arian Gothic garrison because the Arians protected the Jews from the Nicene Catholic persecution. So it's amazing what happens when, you know, you don't kill people who have different views than you.
Well, I think it was the killing of other people that caused this alliance to, well, pseudo-alliance to form in the first place.
That is probably very true.
If the Nicene Christians weren't so gung-ho, then they probably wouldn't have gotten along in the first place.
Yeah. But it's really interesting that, like, a Christian faith is protecting, like, the Jewish faith against another Christian faith. That's just kind of backwards.
Yeah,
but
not sure how many more times that'll happen.
I'm not I'd have to agree with that one. Kind of a cool little thing in the history of this little epic we have.
Yeah,
the city held out for like a short period of time until Belisarius found plans of an old aqueduct that allowed them to enter in the city through that aqueduct. And the Romans entered, and in the ensuing chaos, they massacred the whole city just to show that they were the good guys bringing Catholicism to the area and restoring the might of Rome.
Well, nothing screams good guys like slaughter.
Yeah. Just let everyone die inside. It's fine.
No one can say you're bad if there's no one left.
That is true. As we learned in our last D&D campaign. But anyway, session. After his victory in Naples, Belisarius easily moved up the Italian peninsula. He was constantly being supplied by the fleet that was going alongside it, and he had no resistance from Theodahad. Some of the sources say little to no. He had none. I think he left the local people. The resistance was the local people fighting for, you know, their homes and their lives. And so this is becoming a big problem, right? We haven't heard anything that Theodahad has done in this time. The Ostrogoths and the other Germanic kings, like the Vandals, the Visigoths, their entire authority was based on the belief that they would protect and share in the spoils of war for their people. Theodahad wasn't exactly doing that. Here's another quote from Procopius that states,
"Theodahad was not making the least preparation for war, by nature unmanly. The Goths who were at Rome and in the country round about had even before the fall of Naples regarded with great amazement his inactivity, because though the enemy was in his neighborhood, he was unwilling to engage them in battle, and they felt among themselves much suspicion toward him, believing he was betraying the cause of the Goths to the Emperor Justinian of his own free will and cared about nothing else."
I love how the phrase of the great amazement at its inactivity.
Yeah.
Like, we are impressed at how he is doing nothing at this point. I'm going to go ahead and say that the last part about him betraying the Goths to Justinian is just character assassination. He clearly sucked at war, but I don't think he was outright going to betray the Goths to Justinian. They also, remember, the sources claimed that Malasuntha's downfall was because she was, you know, it was suspicious that she was plotting to give it over. I'm starting to believe that that's not a thing, and then it's just what the Romans just want to make up to make themselves, you know, make the Goths look like traitors and, you know...
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, make yourselves not feel bad about, you know, taking over stuff.
Yeah, burning, you know, fields and cities and towns. His inability to mount even a feeble resistance gave Amalasuntha's son-in-law Vitiges enough power to declare himself king, or rather the nobles elected him king because they had nobody else to turn to. Theodahad wasn't doing shit. His first act as king was to order a Goth named Optaris to bring Theodahad to him dead or alive. Optaris didn't feel like going through the hassle of capturing Theodahad and then having to bring him alive, you know, feeding him and transporting him in custody. So he just slashed his throat and ended the short, ineffective rule of Theodahad. That's it. That's the end of Theodahad. You ready to rate him?
Yeah. Well, we might be able to count his score on both of our hands.
Yeah, probably.
All right.
All right.
Royal power.
Malasuntha made him co-ruler in 534, and she died in 535. And he was assassinated in 536. So he really only ruled for about a year by himself. And a little bit of extra info. Again, there was no story with him. It was literally just the Romans were marching and he did nothing. Theodahad, at the time his ascension, he was an elderly man. He preferred poetry and Neoplatonic philosophy over matters of war. This is why I'm not thinking that, you know, he was doing some elaborate plot to sell, you know, the Goths over to Justinian, or that he even had anything to do with Malasuntha's death. So, positives, he outlived his co-ruler Malasuntha, and, you know, had enough power to imprison her, if that's what he did, or the nobility did. Negatives, he lost Sicily, over half of Italy. He let Naples be massacred and didn't attempt even some sort of resistance against Belisarius and the Romans.
Yeah, pretty awful.
Yeah, I see nothing. I was about to say
a fat zero.
Yeah, I can't give any points.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that his ability to order an assassination could have been done by any other royal in his relative position.
Yeah.
He was there because it was convenient.
Exactly, yeah.
If anything, at least in my opinion, he was probably elevated to that position in the first place as a co-ruler because he was probably seen as weak.
That is probably very good chance of that.
Yeah. Smart queen, less smart king, co-ruler. Sounds like a way to, you know, try and be a ruler without having a, without being interfered with.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right. Zeros so, all around.
All around. Total of zero. Off to a great start.
All right. Infamy.
All right. So, aggravating factors. He may have had a part in Malasuntha's imprisonment and death. We have discussed at length in Amalasuntha's episode why we don't think that he had anything to deal with her death. Basically, for those who didn't listen to that episode, Justinian had more to gain than he did. In fact, he had power to lose if she were to die. Mitigating factors, I can't give him credit assassination. He did nothing. I have to say zero.
Yep, same here. Zeros all around. That's another easy one.
Yep. All right.
All right. Religious passion.
He did nothing to advance the church. There was no stories of his piety. He liked poetry and philosophy.
Yeah. Really, it's another whopping zero.
Yeah.
Zeros all around. All right. Stability.
So during his rule, there was a coup d'etat against this co-ruler. So you're already starting up, you know, stable. And then Rome was creating enough problems, you know, they were just waltzing in the kingdom like they owned the place. Yeah. And it was falling apart during his rule. I mean,
yeah, we didn't even really need to talk about this one. No. More zeros.
Zero.
All right. Royal demise.
So he was killed for the throne. I guess that's something. That's a point, maybe. I'll give him a point.
I don't know. I guess I'll give him a point.
He didn't.
Because he died by being assassinated. And that's, I mean, not particularly Great, but yeah, like, at least it's something.
Hey, he got a point. Good for him.
I really thought he was going to be the first zero. All right, well, let's see if he gets anything in the last category. Legacy.
So for the dynasty aspect, he had a wife named Gudiliva, and they had a son named another Theo name, Theo de Gisclus.
Let's see.
Theo.
Theo de Gisclus?
I'm going to call
Gisclus.
Him.
Gisclus?
Gisclus.
I don't know if you use the J or the G J sound or oh, G Theo, sound.
Yeah.
Theo de Gisclus? Gisclus or Theo de Gisclus?
The spelling is Theodegiscluss. If someone wants to tell us how to pronounce that, wonderful. More power to you. And then he had a daughter named, because, you know, we don't have enough Theo names, Theodenatha. And nothing further came out of his dynasty.
Okay. Sorry, I was trying to see if I could Google how to pronounce.
I figured.
Okay, so he had kids.
But
and that's it?
That's it. We don't know. Nothing really came out of them. Speaking of dynasty, though, he is the last Ostrogothic king that descended from the Gothic ancient and noble house, Amali, who dominated a vast territory in southwestern Europe. Southeastern Europe was the Visigoths. And yep. They crushed many tribes and kingdoms on its way to power. So this was the Amali was a very powerful house. That was his house, not him. He's just the last one.
So he's the killer of the dynasty.
Essentially, yeah. He's
fantastic.
He makes an appearance in a German book called, translated to A Struggle for Rome. And according to Wikipedia, because I had to really scrape the bottom of the barrel for this one, in the book he is described as weak and subservient to his wife, Gothelinda, who is portrayed as the true culprit behind Suntha's murder. That's what I got for legacy.
It sounds pretty slim pickings here.
I'm
so
thinking one for being the last king of the Amali line, and that's a very weak one. Very weak.
I don't know if he even gets that in my book. I'm going to give him a zero.
There you go. All right.
All right. For time for the big total.
Yeah.
Oh. We don't have to do some hard math on this one.
Oh, man. What is it? One plus one plus one.
You got, yeah. Yeah. You,
I think,
you wanna,
I, think, I,
you
think got
think,
I think
you,
I think
can't,
I got
you can't
it.
Count it on one hand.
Yeah. We didn't even have to use two hands.
What's the number, Michael?
I think it's three.
It is three. That's it.
That's
three.
You know, that's impressive in its own right. yeah. So, do we even have to do this next part? Should he be crowned as High King, a minor lord, or burned at the stake? I mean,
he's probably not going to be, he's probably not going to burn too well because he's at the bottom. He's going to be at the bottom of the, he's going to be at the bottom of the lake.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd be like kindling.
He's at the bottom of Lake Bolsena.
Oh, there you go. I like that. Yep. We'll throw him there. So we'll burn
That's
him
right.
and then throw him in the lake.
Oh, that too.
Because.
So, yeah, not exactly a glowing recommendation.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Any thoughts on this non-existent king? And we thought, oh my God, was his name Thorismund was non-existent? At least he fought Attila the Hun. This guy did nothing.
Yeah, no, this was truly like the biggest sock puppet of a king ever.
Yeah,
like literally did nothing.
Yeah,
absolutely nothing.
The reason like I didn't just throw this into like a backstory is like this sets up like the next war that we're gonna go through with the next couple of kings. So I was like, well, I guess we'll just talk about what the Romans did during his time because he didn't do shit.
Yeah. clearly. It is kind of, you know, it is kind of nice, because I do kind of recall hearing about either through, like, I don't know, reading, infotainment, other things. I do recall a little bit about the Belisarius, you know, kind of like raids that kind of like started snaking its way back up through
Italy.
So yeah. It's kind of nice to understand why he was so successful at first.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really easy to succeed when there's no one attacking you.
Yeah. It makes you think that he is a great general, but like, it makes him look so much better than like kind of what he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun context.
Yeah. I think, yes. Yeah. I don't, some of the worst kings we've had look like a better general than he does.
Well, it's actually really funny because, well, we also talked how he took out the Vandals as well, right?
Yeah, correct.
Also led by mostly incompetent people.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, Gelomer just kept going, oh, we're going to destroy you, have all the, you know, the places set up, and then for some reason just didn't do anything.
Yeah, so... you wonder how, I mean, obviously, like, a pretty, you know, good general overall, but like, how, you know, how much did he really, how great was he really, I guess, in the face of,
yeah,
you know, some of the competition that he's had.
Yeah, he doesn't become royalty, so we can't do an episode like through the main story. Again, another, we'll just add this to the Patreon pile of he's a very interesting character there. You don't even, if we don't do it, there's tons of YouTube on him. I mean, I would check him out. Belisarius's reign is fantastic, and it'll give you a glimpse of what's to come in our little channel if you can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm oversimplifying things, because again, we're looking at the results, not the battle itself for most of our content.
Correct.
So it's a little bit broad of a view. I'm sure he's had some impressive marks. It just is really funny because we see from our viewpoint that he's basically been going up against, you know, the chumps, the bench warmers of the kings.
Yeah, he's like an NFL player going up against the high school player.
Yeah, exactly.
So that brings us to the end of a non-entity king. Let us know what you thought of Theodahad. Did you forget him already? Because I sort of did. Message us via Messenger on Facebook and Instagram at Quest for Power, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support what we do here, please leave a review or subscribe on whatever platform you use. We will read every 5-star review posted to podchaser.com. We'll have the link in the show notes. As always, thank you very much for spending your valuable time with us. Next episode, we are going to review his usurper, Vitiges. Do you think he's going to have a more effective reign, or is he going to be another name in the history books that deserves to be burned and chucked into the lake? Until next time, the king is dead.
Long live the king!